Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36, entitled Slaying of the Arishta, the Bull Demon. We're reading text number 34. Ugrasenam Chapitaram. Ugrasenam Chapitaram. Staviram Raja Kamukam. Staviram Raja Kamukam. Tad Britharam Devakam Cha. Tad Brataram Devakam Cha. Ye Chanye Vidvisho Mama. Ye chanye vidvisho mama. Ugrasenam chapitaram. Staviram raja kamukam. Tad brataram devakam cha. Ye chanye vidvisho mama. Ugrasenam cha pitaram. Ugrasenam cha pitaram. Staviram raja kamukam. Tad brataram devakam cha. Nichane vidvisho mama. Matijis. Ugrasenam cha pitaram. Taviram Rajakampa. Ugrasenam. King Ugrasena. Cha. And. Pitaram. My father. Staviram. Old. Rajya, for the kingdom. Kamukam, greedy. Tad Bhrataram, his brother. Devakam, Devaka. Cha, also. Ye, who. Cha, and. Anye, others. Vidvishah, enemies. Mama, my. Translation. I will also kill my old father, Ugrasen, who is greedy for my kingdom. And I will kill his brother, Devaka, and all my other enemies as well. We continue to read text 35 to 40 also. Then my friend, this earth, will be free of thorns. My elder relative, Jarasandha, and my dear friend, Dvivida, are solid well-wishers of mine, as are Sambara, Naraka and Bana. I will use them all to kill off those kings who are allied with the demigods. And then I will rule the earth. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital. Sri Akrura said, O king, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces the result of one's work. An ordinary person is determined to act on his desires, even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore, he encounters both happiness and distress. Yet, even though such is the case, I will execute your order. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains that although what Akrura said was courteous and encouraging, his hidden meaning was far different. What he really meant was this: your plan is not fit to execute, yet I will carry it out since you are the king and I am your subject. And in any case, you are about to die. The last verse. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus instructed Akrura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers and retired to his quarters, and Akrura returned home. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasandhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. We are in the junction of Vrindavan and Mathura. So, here is a very transitory episode of the Bhagavatam where substantial change is going to happen soon. So, in this particular series of verses which we just read, we find the mindset of Kamsa coming out very obvious. So far, Kamsa's mindset has been coming out in the form of these demons who have been coming. But the real intention of Kamsa has not really come out very strongly in the Bhagavatam. Unless the real intention comes out, justification of killing doesn't make sense. So here, you know, through this series of verses, Kamsa's mindset is coming out very strongly. So, Krishna describes what a person who is demonic is in the Bhagavad Gita. And here we find Kamsa exactly fitting the description. Where a person feels very strongly that he is in control. And his plans are so perfect that nothing and no one can actually impede his plans. And he makes different people pawns in his plan making, you know. And he thinks that life will continue as it is. So we will just discuss some thought process and some of the things that come out from this series of verses. So one of the very interesting things that really comes out very strongly right in the beginning is how Kamsa is calling his relative Jarasandha. He's saying, Jarasandho mama gurur. So, he is addressing Jarasandha as his elder relative. But, interestingly, he is calling him his guru. So, the whole mindset of Kamsa reflects on the fact that
he has wrong guidance. Because he is considering the wrong people to be his gurus, so therefore his mindset also is going the wrong direction. Specifically, why Jarasandha is considered to be Kamsa's guru? Because Jarasandha is one person who never gives up in spite of all defeats. And he is one person who is determined to kill Krishna. So that of course comes out much later, but the attitude is still the same. So because Kamsa has such people who are his associates, his mindset becomes naturally in that same way. So the position of guru cannot be given to anybody. So naturally, the question is, you know, how can Kamsa give such a position to Jarasandha? Unfortunately, if you have the wrong desires, you seek the wrong teachers. There is a interesting example which talks about what is the mood of a guru, what is the role of a teacher in our lives. Shankaracharya talks about how three things are unattainable, very, very tough to get, very, very tough to obtain. The first thing that is unattainable is human life. Getting human life is an unattainable thing. But somehow or the other gets it. After getting human life, the second thing that is unattainable is the desire for liberation. The desperation to seek liberation from the cycle of birth and death. That is practically unattainable. Even if somebody gets that, the accompaniment of a great soul is even more unattainable. So from the desire for material enjoyment to the desire for liberation, who helps you is a great soul, is the association of a great sadhu. Just like human body is rare to get, but even when one gets a human body, along with it comes a huge baggage of desires. If you compare the human body to be like a kurta or a piece of cloth, when you soak it in water, what happens to the piece of cloth? It becomes wet with that water. That water is compared to desires. A human being gets soaked with unlimited desires. Unlimited desires. How much ever you squeeze, more desires come out. What is the role of a guru, of a teacher? The role of the guru is to hang the kurta on a rod and expose him to sunlight. The sunlight is wisdom of the Vedas. The sunlight is God's grace. The role of a teacher is to make sure that fellow is hanging under sunlight, not hanging, you know, where in a damp place. Environment which increases your desire is like an environment which is filled with fog. The cloth becomes even wetter. I was in Vrindavan recently and, you know, temperature was 2 degrees, 4 degrees in the morning, you know, sometimes 8 degrees. Now, you put your cloth to hang, it never gets dry. You know, how much ever you allow it to hang. Because the atmosphere is filled with so much wetness. So the role of a teacher is to make sure that that person who is filled with unlimited desires is hanging under the sun, so that slowly his desires go away and what remains is fresh cloth. What is fresh cloth which is without water? It is a human being who has only one desire left, the desire for liberation. So developing the right desires, developing the right intentions is what the role of a teacher is. But if you have a teacher like Jarasandha, you can be rest assured for the rest of your life you will remain wet. Kamsa loved to remain wet. And therefore he chose such a teacher who would allow him to remain wet. So, if you see his plan making, he is, you know, talking about how he is going to use his relatives like Jarasandha, you know, other friends like Duvida and Shambhara, Naraka, Bana, all these friends of his, he calls them to be his well-wishers. So now, what does a person do with a well-wisher? Naturally, a person reciprocates love with a well-wisher. But here Kamsa is saying, I will use them to kill all those kings who are allied to the demigods. And then I will rule the earth. So, he doesn't want to love them, but he wants to use them. And this is his whole mindset of what friendship is. Friendship is like a mirror. When you look at yourself, you know, the kind of person you are reflects in the mirror. So, there are three things that we can learn from a mirror when it comes to friendship. The first thing one learns is that, when you look at a mirror, what does it teach us? Who you are determines what you see. When you see the world around you, what you see in the world around you, it depends on who you yourself are. If you yourself are of a certain type, you will see the world in the same way. I'll give you a simple example. Somebody who likes to dress nicely, he looks at people, what will that person see? That person will see, "Arey, look at all these people. Either they are well-dressed or not, they are not well-dressed." Somebody who likes hairstyles, they'll come to Hare Krishna temple and say, "These people all have bad hairstyles," you know. Somebody who is focused on intelligence, he will converse with the person and find out what kind of intelligence this person has. That's how he sees that, you know, whatever he sees around. Like, one time there was this, there were two people, a very famous story of two people who were in a hospital and both were dying, you know, of some deadly disease. One of them was next to a window and the other person was a little away from the window. And the person who was in the window, next to the window, he would get up every day and look outside the window and describe to the other fellow whatever he's seeing, all the beautiful sceneries. After some time, this man died and then he said, "Can I shift to the window?" He wanted to experience whatever, because this, whatever he would hear from this man was giving him a lot of hope. When they shifted him, he eagerly got up to see what is outside the window. He saw there was a blank wall. Nothing outside the window. So he asked the nurse, "What is this man describing so much? There's nothing outside the window." She told him that this man was trying to keep you alive with inspiration. So basically, what he saw outside is what his mind reflected. And that's what he shared, right? So basically, So, who you are determines what you see. Another thing is that who you are determines how you see others. Depending on who you are, you look at the other person and you see, judge a person in the same way. So, like there was one man who traveled long distance, came to another city, and he met an old man in that city, right at the entrance. He asked him, "How are the people inside the city?" The old man asked him, "How are the people in the city where you came from?" He said, "All of them are stupid people, very, you know, bad mindsets, really, you know, filthy." The old man said, "That's exactly how the city people are." Another traveler came and he asked the same old man, "How are people in the city?" He asked the same question, "How are the people in your city where you came from?" He said, "The people in my city were the most amazing people on earth. They were so kind, they were so generous, they were so much loving and caring." This old man said, "That's exactly how the city is. Same city, same people, but two different, you know, viewpoints." Because the old man was telling him that how you see people, that's how people will appear to you. And who you are determines how you see life. There was one small boy who wanted to play a trick on his grandfather. So the grandfather was sleeping on an easy chair, you know. So this old boy, he went to his grandfather. He took a old smelly cheese and he rubbed it on the mustache of the grandfather. And the boy went and hid. So the grandfather got up and he started smelling. He said, "This room stinks." And he went to another room. He said, "This room also stinks." And he went to another room. Everywhere he is saying this, every room stinks. And he went outside the house. He said, "The whole world is stinking." Where was the stink? The stink was in his mustache. So unfortunately, many people see others depending on how they see their own life. So how you, who you are determines how you see your life. So here, Kamsa was a self-focused person. A self-focused person, the tendency of a self-focused person is that he always feels restless and hungry. He wants more and more and more. But the problem is, the emptiness of the heart, and when such a person has an empty heart, feels the emptiness of the heart, he is driven to pack up that emptiness by getting more and more and more things. So he feels, the more I fill up my life with things, the emptiness which I am feeling in my heart, the voidness that I am feeling in my heart will become filled. Unfortunately, you cannot fill your voidness of the heart by acquiring things externally. So therefore, when a person is too much focused on himself, such a person always feels hungry. Such a person always feels empty. Unfortunately, even when you acquire something, like suppose somebody says, I work so hard all my life and I build a bungalow. That is one way of seeing it. I built a bungalow. Another way of seeing it from a philosophical angle is that, that bungalow has bound you. That bungalow has trapped you. So Kamsa's way of seeing it is that, I am expanding this kingdom. But what he is not able to see is that the kingdom has trapped him. The kingdom has bound him. His mind cannot think beyond that kingdom. His mind is bound by that kingdom. Liberation is going beyond the material world. Not just to speak of one house or one, you know, country. It's going beyond the material world. So the horizon of what liberated person can see is much bigger than the horizon of how a bound person can see. However big your boundary may be, still it is bound. But a liberated person, there is no boundary at all, because there is no binding in for such a person's life. So Kamsa, he was looking at people around him as thorns. He was looking at Krishna, Balaram, he was looking at all the other enemies of the demigods as friends of the demigods as thorns. The funny part was, he was looking at himself and all his friends as flowers. That's how the world is. Every thorn considers itself beautiful and the flower ugly. And every flower considers itself beautiful and the thorn ugly. Who is ugly and who is beautiful? It depends on who you are. So here, Kamsa was convinced that everybody else were thorns and we are flowers. If you study all the scriptures, the same mindset comes out practically in all the scriptures. Every demon feels he is right. And there are many demons who are ready to justify how this person is right and the others are wrong. Nowadays you find scriptures being written from the perspective of Duryodhan, from the perspective of Ravan. You know, there is a book that says, The Untold Saga of a mistreated king, you know. So they consider Ravan to be a mistreated king, Ravan to be a person who has gone through suffering, trauma in his life, and all this time, you know, Ram has been glorified. Now is the time for Ravan to be glorified. And they write a whole book from the perspective of Ravan, you know. So you can write perspectives in the way you want, but that doesn't change the truth. The flower, the thorn may write a biography of himself, of how the flowers are dangerous to us. But the fact remains the same. Who is going to judge is not the thorn or the flower. It is somebody who is neutral, who is going to use both. So similarly, in life, when you see which perspective you want to see, you have to see it from the perspective of what really God is seeing. In the Ramayana, we find this story of Shurpanakha, where Shurpanakha is a victim. So people feel that she has been victimized by Ram and Lakshman. they don't understand. Another way of seeing the whole thing is that every victim feels that he or she is innocent. But the fact is that actually every victim creates their own tormentor. Shurpanaka created her own tormentor. It's not that Ram and Lakshman were waiting to torment her. She went and instigated them to become her tormentor. In life, this is how things work. Kamsa is sitting in one place, Krishna is sitting in another place. Kamsa constantly is going and poking him with different demons. Who is the victim and who is the tormentor? The victim always creates his own tormentor. Here, Kamsa has tried enough to poke Krishna from far. Now he realizes all that is not working. Long distance, not working. He wants to get him closer so that he can, under his own supervision, torment him properly. So when Kamsa will get killed, there will be many people who will say, "Are, achha aadmi tha, maar diya. Bhanje ne mama ko maar diya. Kaisa duniya ye." People can see different perspectives, but they don't see the perspective from which why Krishna came there. Here is the perspective the Bhagavatam reveals. Krishna came there because Kamsa instigated him. Krishna came there because Kamsa was the one who kept poking him all the time. So, in this verse, Kamsa tells Akrura, "Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once. Bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital." So, here, Kamsa is telling Akrur, "Now that you understand my intentions," what he actually is implying, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, is that, "Now that you understand my intentions, keep my intentions a secret. Do not tell the world, do not tell Krishna Balaram that my intention is to kill them. My intention, you should tell them, is to bring them to the bow sacrifice. My intention is to show the opulence of Mathura to Krishna and Balaram." So, this concept of keeping intentions a secret is a concept that really boils down to what spiritual life is about. Spiritual life revolves around intentions. What your intentions are. How much do you want to keep secret and how much you want to allow the world to know. That determines with what mood Krishna comes into your life. Kamsa wanted to keep his intentions a secret. So Krishna did come into his life. But when Krishna came into his life, you know, it was a disaster. So in our lives also, each one of us have intentions for which we are practicing spiritual life. We are welcoming Krishna into our lives. But if each one has an intention which is kept secret, an intention which we do not want to reveal to Krishna to bring him into our lives, that intention will determine how Krishna behaves with us. So, if you compare Vasudeva and Kamsa, both of them, at one perspective if you see, one angle if you see, both of them lied. Both of them did not speak complete truths. Kamsa is telling Akrura, "Don't tell Krishna Balaram my intentions." Vasudeva, on another hand, he also did not speak the truth. He told Kamsa, "Don't worry, I'll give all my children to you." He spoke a lie. But if you see, if you compare the two, the difference between the two is the intention. Vasudeva's intention was not self-aggrandizement. In fact, Vasudeva was going to go through trauma on a personal level. His intention was to please Krishna. But Kamsa's intention was to traumatize Krishna and to have self-aggrandizement, enjoy himself. But exactly the opposite happened. Vasudev, he was allowing his own life to go through trauma so that it gives pleasure to Krishna. And Kamsa wanted to allow Krishna to go through trauma so that he gets pleasure. But exactly the opposite happened. If you compare Vasudev and Dasharath, both were interested in following the truth. Vasudev wanted to follow the truth. Dasharath wanted to follow the truth. But Dasharath, in order to follow the truth of this world, the relative truth of the world, he gave up the absolute truth, Lord Ram. He wanted to fulfill his boon to Kaikeyi, he told Ram to go away. So to follow the relative truth, he abandoned the absolute truth, exiled the absolute truth. And Vasudev, in order to facilitate the absolute truth, he gave up the relative truth of this world. He lied. But what he did in the process of lying was, he facilitated the absolute truth. So, again, in the Ramayana, when Ram goes away to the forest, Dasharatha is running after him because he cannot handle his son leaving in front of his own eyes. And while Dasharatha is following, Dasharatha tells Sumantra, the chariot driver, go slowly. There is a lot of drama going on. People are crying, people are wailing, you know, there are horses which are neighing, elephants are trumpeting, too much noise is going on. Dasharatha is telling Sumantra, go slowly. And Ram is telling Sumantra, go fast. Now Sumantra is confused, whom to listen to? Should I listen to Ram? Should I listen to the king? Ram tells him, in very low voice, he tells him, go fast. And when you come back, when Dasharatha asks you why you went fast, you tell him, I did not hear in the sound of all these trumpets. I did not hear your voice telling me to go slow. Maryada Purushottam Ram is telling here Sumantra to tell a lie. What sense does it make? Intentions is a secret. The more time Ram spends in that place, more the trauma, the more the agony in Dasharatha's heart is going to be higher. Not just Dasharatha, so many people. Ram wanted to finish the agony quickly. So he said, go fast. That lie is not a lie. Because it is done with the right intention. But here, Kamsa, his lie, so-called hiding the intention, was actually a complete disaster because his intention was wrong. His intention was to harm the Lord. So, and even when, if you think from the perspective of what he was calling him for, what was Kamsa calling Krishna for? For a bow sacrifice. Interestingly, in almost all the major, you know, epics, you find the bow sacrifice is like a terminating, is a turning point, you know. In the Mahabharata, you find the bow sacrifice where Arjuna comes. That's where the Pandavas are revealed to the world because they were considered to be dead. And he wins the hand of Draupadi. In the bow sacrifice in the Ramayana, you find Lord Ram coming and breaking the bow and winning the hand of Mother Sita. So that bow sacrifice in the Ramayana indicates the end of the Shiva bow indicates destruction, indicates negative energy. So when Ram broke the Shiva bow, he's indicating that the negative energy in this world is getting destroyed. And now a phase of positivity is starting. And here in the Bhagavatam also, Kamsa is calling Krishna to the bow sacrifice. What does Krishna do with the bow? He again breaks it. But he just doesn't break the bow, he uses the bow to break people's backs. Destroy Kamsa's people. So the intention of the sacrifice is more important than just the sacrifice itself. Ravana, he only did lip service to Shiva. He never actually followed Lord Shiva. Because Shiva is a symbol of detachment. And Ravana is a symbol of attachment. How can somebody who is a symbol of detachment assist somebody who is a symbol of attachment? And how can somebody who is a symbol of attachment actually say, I am following Lord Shiva, who is a symbol of detachment? It doesn't make any sense. So, rituals are very easy to do. Kamsa was an expert in doing rituals. This bow sacrifice, he talks about how, you know, animals should be sacrificed, make the sacrifice elaborate, attract thousands of people from around the world to be present in the sacrifice. The ritual is very good. It may be even carried out perfectly. But what is the purpose behind the ritual? That creates the disaster. If you study in the, where Janak attracted Lord Ram towards the bow sacrifice, he created a sacrifice which would attract people of the world. He created a sacrifice which would attract positive forces from the world. So, Lord Ram came. The Swayamvar of Draupadi, if you see, the way in which the Swayamvar was organized was in a way to attract, you know, all the most powerful warriors in the world. But the intention of the Swayamvar was very clear, very clean. It was an intention where only Arjun could win the Swayamvar. Nobody else practically. But here in this bow sacrifice, the intention is very clear. The intention is destruction. And that's exactly what happened. But destruction, not of Krishna, but destruction of Kamsa happened. So, sensitivity is what the Vedas are all about. Rituals can be carried out in a way which is very insensitive. And rituals can be carried out also in a way which is very sensitive. So, Kamsa here was carrying out a Vedic sacrifice, but in a most insensitive way. What is the point in doing a Vedic sacrifice without having sensitivity in mind? Therefore, there are two words. Veda, without understanding Vedana. Vedana means pain of others. Being sensitive towards the pain of others. When you understand the Vedas ritualistically, without understanding what Vedana people are going through, that kind of sacrifice is useless. That kind of sacrifice is actually not a Vedic sacrifice at all. So Kamsa was doing a Vedic sacrifice, but without understanding what the essence of the Vedas are. So the Vedas are scriptures that help us understand pains that people go through, so that one can be elevated slowly to a higher level. One time there was a small child, 5-6 year old child. He had gone to a shopping mall, huge mall. 5-6 year old child going alone to a huge mall, and he was at the cash counter with a doll he wanted to buy. The person at the cash counter understood that this boy doesn't have enough money. This boy was carrying a wallet in his hand, and behind him there was a very rich man standing. He understood something, different is going on here. So the cashier, he asked the boy, "What do you want?" He said, "I want this doll." So the rich man, after understanding the fact that the boy doesn't have enough money, he asked the boy, "Why do you want this doll for?" The boy said, "I want this doll because I want to send it to my sister. 2 days back, my sister has gone, to the abode of God. And she loved this doll, so I want to send it to her." So this rich man asked this boy, "How are you going to send the doll to your sister who's in the abode of God?" He said, "Because 2 days later, my mother is also going to the abode of God." So this man understood, because a few days back there was an accident where a mother and daughter were badly injured. The daughter died instantly and the mother was almost on the verge of dying. Then this rich man immediately took the wallet of the boy and he said, "Maybe you didn't count properly." And he put a little money into it and gave it back to the boy so that he could buy that doll. In this world, people can be sensitive or insensitive. What is Vedic and what is non-Vedic? Vedic is not just about ritualistically being perfect. But along with ritualistically being perfect, it is also about intentionally being perfect. If the ritual is perfect and the intention is imperfect, it is not Vedic. But on the other hand, if the intention is perfect and the ritual is imperfect, it is Vedic. What is Vedic and what is non-Vedic depends more on the inner mindset, which is what everyone tries to hide from others. Kamsa is trying to hide the intention from Krishna, hide the intention from everybody, telling Akrura, "You keep my intentions a secret." Keeping intention secret doesn't make actually the ritual bona fide. In fact, it makes it hypocritical. So, Akrura, when he heard the plan making of Kamsa, he started telling Kamsa something which is wisdom from the Vedas again. He said, "O king, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself from misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces results of one's work." So basically, you may make the best plan, but making the best plan without understanding that there is a plan maker who's already made a lot of plans creates a conflict in plans. When a river flows, and a river suddenly takes a steep turn during heavy monsoons, only a foolish person will say, I'm going to stop the river from turning. When the river turns, allow the river to turn. If you don't allow the river to turn, if you try not to allow the river to turn, you will get blown away. The river is still going to turn, whether you allow it or don't allow it. That's how life's plans are. We plan life in a certain way. We have planned life in a way which we have perfectly thought, this is how my life is going to go. Straight. The day life takes a turn, we panic. And we say, stop it, you can't turn. What do you mean by you can't turn? It's not you who are going to plan. The plan is already made, depending on your previous actions. And when, rather than submitting to the plan, rather than bending to the plan, we try to stand erect. That bent will destroy us. When a river passes over a village sometimes, destroying an entire village, what we can see is destruction on one hand. But what we can also see on the other hand is that when the water recedes, it leaves back fertile soil, which has much more minerals than before. So you can see the plans that happen to us in our lives in one way as destruction of our personal plans, but in another way as fulfillment of a higher plan. One man, he was shipwrecked and he was thrown on an island alone. And struggling in this lonely island, he decided, anyway, I'm here, let me make a living. So he started looking for food, he started looking for, you know, different resources. He was happy. Somehow or the other, he constructed a house for himself, and he was one day going out to fetch some food. And when he came back, he saw that his hut was burning. He started yelling at God. He said, what kind of a person are you? You have, first of all, taken everything away from me, and now this one small house I hut I have, that also you took away. After an hour, a ship came to rescue him. And he asked the ship, how did you come to know? He said, we saw the smoke going up and we knew somebody is in trouble. So when our house goes on smoke, a house goes on fire, we may blame the God for why the fire happened, or we may see the plan of God in making the fire happen for a positive benefit. So here, Akrura is telling Kamsa that one should be equal in success and failure, because it is destiny that determines results. And he says, action should be done with a cool head. It's a very interesting instruction that Akrura is giving Kamsa. Action should be done with a cool head. Which means that whenever we want to take decisions in life, those decisions have to be taken in a phase where we are in a stable position. The ability to discriminate gets destroyed when instability is there in life. Discrimination gets destroyed when six things happen. If you are in any of these six phases of life, you will not be able to discriminate right and wrong properly. The first phase is, if you are in too much joy, if you are too happy, you cannot discriminate right and wrong. In the Mahabharata, there is a story of Virata, the king of the Virata Desh, where Yudhishthira Maharaj and the Pandavas are staying. He was very happy because his son Uttar Kumar had won a war. Unfortunately, he didn't know that actually Arjun, who was in the form of Brihanala, had won that war on behalf of Uttar Kumar. But this man was really happy. My not even 16-year-old son won a war against all the Kauravas. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was with him as his minister. He told Yudhishthira, come, let us play a game of dice. Yudhishthira told him, you should not gamble when you're too happy. This man got angry. He said, what do you mean by that? I'll do whatever I want. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, so he said, my son has won a war. I'm so happy. I want to play. You have to play with me. Yudhishthira Maharaj told him, as long as Brihanala is with him, he will win. This king got so angry at this statement of Yudhishthira Maharaj, he felt it was an insult. He took his dice which he was holding and threw it at the head of Yudhishthira. The dice hit Yudhishthira's head. The head started bleeding. Before the drop of blood fell on the earth, Draupadi caught that blood. Because wherever Yudhishthira Maharaj's blood falls, the kingdom will get destroyed. So, of course, the point is that, you know, the sense of discrimination gets destroyed when there is too much happiness. You don't know what you're doing. When there is too much hankering, the sense of discrimination gets destroyed. Chitraketu Maharaj, typical example, you know. He didn't know what he was committing to. Narada Muni told him, you will get a son who should be called as Harshashoka. He said, no problem. As long as I get a son. So conditions apply, you can't see when there is hankering. That's what advertisements are about, basically. They create too much hankering and somewhere they put an asterisk mark, condition apply. Nobody has any ability, any discrimination to see that small condition applied. Why? Too much hankering already created. When there is too much lamentation, you cannot discriminate properly. Gandhari. Intense amount of lamentation because of her 100 sons being destroyed. She blamed Krishna. In fact, she cursed Krishna. Nobody practically ever cursed Krishna. Only person to curse Krishna was Gandhari. When there is too much bodily identification, the bodily concept is too strong, then also you cannot discriminate. Indra, when he became a pig, he was cursed to become a pig. After a long period of time, when he had, you know, dynasty of pigs, you know, he was told, your time is up, you have to come back and become Indra. He said, what Indra? You know, this is my life. I love this mess that I am in. He didn't want to get out of that environment at all. Bodily concept. When you identify the body very strongly, you cannot discriminate right and wrong. And when there is too much attachment, Dhritarashtra, too much attachment will prevent you from discriminating right and wrong. And when there is too much wealth, Manigrivan Nalakuvera, it destroys your ability to discriminate. So Kamsa had a combination of all these things, practically. He was too much happy, too much hankering, too much lamentation because all his friends were destroyed, you know. Too much wealth, too much attachment, of course in the bodily concept. So if a person has one of these, it's enough to destroy him, you know, from being discriminative. What to speak of a person who has all the six, in completeness, you know. Naturally, such a person will make bewildered decisions. And that's what happened in Kamsa's life. So desires, Akrura says that desires drive an ordinary person to act. Indirectly he is telling Kamsa that you are an ordinary person. Your desires are driving you to act. A person who is extraordinary cannot be forced to act by desires. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. This word, manogata, it means that where do desires arise from? Yada kaman, prajahati yada kaman, sarvan partha manogatan. These desires don't arise from the senses. If you are passing by some shop, you know, and you smell a beautiful, nice looking cake. Now, does the desire come from your eye? Your eye, as soon as you see the cake, it becomes satisfied. No. Does the desire come from your mouth? Or if you hear good music, does the desire come from your ear? The desire comes from the mind. Krishna says, manogataha. Manogata means it originates in the mind. So mind is the place where desires originate. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmani evatmana tushta sita pragya tadochite. What is the difference between a sita pragya and sita agya? Agya means ignorant and pragya means who is knowledgeable. Sita pragya derives pleasure not in manogataha, not in things, not in desires that originate in the mind. He goes much deeper. Atmani evatmana tushta. He derives his pleasure from the Atma, from the Self, which does not throw up desires like the mind. So, the mind's ability to flicker from hankering and lamentation, from sankalpa and vikalpa, from restlessness to stability, is what causes desires. The mind keeps pumping in newer and newer thoughts, keeps you on the toes all the time. But the Atma is a stable factor. It doesn't make you hanker. It doesn't make you run around. It keeps you grounded. So, Krishna, he says that the one who takes shelter of the Atma, Atmani Evatma Manatushta, such a person who actually derives pleasure from the Atma, such a person never runs after Manogataha. Such a person is called Sita Pragya. And somebody who is not is called as Sita Agya. So Kamsa here, Akrura is telling Kamsa that you are having desires, and desires drive an ordinary person to act. So he's telling him that you're an ordinary person. He says, your desires will never be fulfilled. And he says, your desires will never be fulfilled, but my desires will be fulfilled. What is my desire? My desire is not to hanker for things. My desire is not to hanker for position. My desire is not to hanker for security. My desire is to go to Krishna and get him into my heart, into my life, into my house. Therefore, the next chapter begins with, of course, there's Keshi and Keshi demon in between. But after that is Akrur's mood continuing. When he goes to Vrindavan, he is not going in the mood that I am going to execute Kamsa's plan. He is going in the mood that I am going to take shelter of Krishna. He is going in the mood that I am going to fulfill my desire. Which means desires are not wrong. But having the right desires is important. Kamsa had his desires, Akrur had his desires. Kamsa, Krishna, Akrur is telling him, your desires are never going to be fulfilled. And Akrur is telling him, my desires are going to be fulfilled. Fulfillment of spiritual desires is what is Krishna consciousness. And fulfillment of material desires is what is material consciousness. Fulfillment of spiritual desires, hankering for the fulfillment of spiritual desires is encouraged. Hankering for the fulfillment of material desires is discouraged. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya vivarjanam. Anukul, what is anukul to our Krishna consciousness is having spiritual desires. Which is what Akrura manifests. And what is pratikul is having desires that are against Krishna. But then Akrura ends this whole conversation to Kamsa with an encouraging word. He tells Kamsa, this is Vishnu Chakra Thakur talking, that he says that though you have the wrong desires, but still you are going to become fortunate. Why you are going to become fortunate? Because your desires are centered around Krishna. Whether somebody approaches Krishna with the right desire or the wrong desire, sooner or later he is going to become fortunate. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Enjoy.